It was Plomo that first taught Durant to channel his rage and his anger into his boxing. Durant's reputation as the hardest-hitting fighter in Panama kept growing, a reputation that would one day earn him the nickname Hands of Stone.
Rokhan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. Richard Roper is here. He's reviewing. Susan Schmidt is here from Westwood in Dallas. She's auditing today.
Gotta be careful.
Indeed.
Right. Whatever we document.
She's looking at how we spend our money through this hour. All right. there you go. Hands of Stone is the new Robert De Niro film. He plays legendary boxing coach Ray Arcel. Yes?
Yes.
And he is the, he narrates this. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like Goodfellas, right? Or,
yeah, it's a, you know, it's the classic kind of story where you start at the climax, then you go all the way back to the beginning. And a lot of people, of course, remember Roberto Duran, Hands of Stone, because he had that knockout ability. He mm-hmm. came out of nowhere, grew up in the Panama City of the 1960s. Remember, there was the whole, it was a big uprising at the time because, of course, you know, the United States had taken over, had the Panama Canal for a long time.
Right.
There was a lot of unrest in the streets. And he grew up dirt poor, Roberto Duran. And as a kid, just had demonstrated this amazing boxing ability and rose up to become a lightweight contender, 135 pounds, and just could punch like nothing. And all of a sudden was in Madison Square Garden winning fight after fight after fight, but was still very unpolished. And there was this trainer by the name of Ray Arcel, real-life character, who's played by Robert De Niro, which is a great casting touch because, of mm-hmm. course, Robert De Niro starred in the greatest boxing movie of all time, Raging Bull, and won the Oscar for playing Jake LaMotta. And in real life, this actually happened. Ray Arcel was this great trainer who, in the 1950s, tried to expand boxing from New York City. He recognized that boxing would be a great television sport and would play across the country. And the New York mob said, no, 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 no. And they almost killed him. They knocked him out. They beat him to within an inch of his life. And they made an agreement with him. You will never train anybody for money ever again. And we'll let you live.
Wow.
And 20 years later, he saw Duran fighting at the Garden and said, I got to train this guy. And the mob, you know, pulled him aside eventually and said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm training him for free. And they're like, all right, well, we kind of admire that.
All right,
we're going to let you do it. I mean, that all pretty much happened, and it's cataloged here. The guy that plays Roberto Duran is an actor by the name of Edgar Ramirez, and he's been in a few movies and a few TV shows. He's not a huge star, but he really gets Roberto Duran. He gets the swagger, he gets the machismo, he gets the charisma, but he also gets the dark side. Because, you know, to this day, Roberto Duran is a very complex figure. He was a hero in Panama when he won the world championship. And then he became the most reviled figure in Panama when, of course, he quit in his second fight against Sugar Ray Leonard, the infamous No Mas fight,
right.
Where in the eighth
mm-hmm.
round.
And we were talking about this earlier,
right.
Because
yeah.
the story on that was he had to go poop. And that he.
What?
Right. I mean, that was it. That was the story of why he said that. And
that's the story he tells. And, you know, the movie does a pretty good argument. You know, look, it's based on an authorized biography of Duran, so it's pretty kind to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps on playing on the theme that this guy was hungry, literally hungry for most of his life, with, you know, stealing mangoes from trees and running away from the authorities and in and out of juvie. And that when he finally made his millions, one of the things he would do between bouts was eat to excess. Up into
well, he gained weight that way.
Yeah,
he had to.
So,
I remember that. This is an amazing era
the gold,
of boxing,
right? Yeah,
right?
You and I remember this. I think we went to some of the closed circuit telecasts
Absolutely.
Of these bouts, right?
Right, at movie theaters. And,
yeah,
and so Sugar Ray Leonard was this great, you know, Olympic boxer in '76. Who then
yep.
you know had this
Montreal.
Amazing career after that. Mm-hmm. He had the unspeakable eye injury that it cost him his lateral sight, and yet he was still able to fight at this incredible level. And Duran, that was one of the great after the end of Ali's career, mm-hmm. the end of his era. These were the because they had those lightning fast hands. Those were the most important guys in boxing.
You had all these guys at different weight classes in the middle there, from lightweight to middleweight. You know, you had Hagler and Tommy Hitman Hearns and I mean just tons. Aaron Pryor, all kinds of great fighters. But Duran and Leonard, it was the classic matchup because, as you mentioned, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard also was movie star, handsome and incredibly smart and articulate and beloved. And Roberto Duran was illiterate and brutish and, you know, could be horrible to women. And we got a clip here. So Usher, the pop star Usher, casted Sugar Ray Leonard, which at first seems kind of gimmicky, and they got some prosthetics that actually make him look more like Sugar Ray Leonard. But so the first fight, Sugar Ray Leonard decides that he's going to get away from his dancing pretty boy image, and he's going to stand toe-to-toe with Roberto Duran to prove he's a man. And that's why he loses the fight. Because he can't do that. And it was a very close decision. So here's the moment after the first fight where Sugar Ray realizes that Duran is a lot smarter than people give him credit for.
He hurt you to drive me crazy. To get me to be in his macho tough guy war.
Ray, you're obsessed.
I'm telling you, it's a strategy. It's been a strategy. From the moment he insulted you, he knew that he could get in my head and cause me to stand toe-to-toe with him. I've never lost. I don't lose. Angelo, talk to Don King. Duran should fight no one but me.
Now, this is interesting because they're pointing to the Don King moment.
Yeah.
And this is what made Don King,
yep.
This is what gave him his comeback, was Roberto Duran. Essentially, yep. and Sugar Ray.
And Don King essentially outsmarted everyone because he got...
Who plays Don King in this? Don King?
Not a well-known actor, but the guy who plays him is really, really good in a small role. But he got Duran's backers to sign a contract that Duran didn't know about that said if he didn't fight whoever Don King and CBS, you know, was backing the film, the fight, if he didn't fight whoever they said he had to fight within 6 months, he would be stripped of the title. He didn't have any choice. And they said it has to be Sugar Ray Leonard. So there's Duran, 30 pounds overweight, told he's got 2 months to get into shape for the bout. So they fought. The rematch was within like 5 months. And that's the rematch that, you know, everybody thinks about, that fight where Sugar Ray's doing that thing where he's doing the wind-up punch. He's taunting him because he's got him so thoroughly outclassed. He was whipping him. And then, you know, the school of thought was that Duran, you know, was so sick, literally sick to his stomach, that he couldn't fight anymore. Others say he just quit because he realized he was being humiliated. But the way he quit is what had Panama then, the whole country then, you know, they were throwing stuff at his house and everything. But then he came back and actually won another championship after that. And then years later fought Sugar Ray again and has had, you know, a checkered career. And he finally quit at the age of 50. So it's an interesting movie. To, you know, it's not Rocky or a lot of these other boxing movies. It's closer to Raging Bull because it's kind of a mixed story. But Hands of Stone, I'm giving 3.5 stars because it's pretty honest about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, it kind of glosses over some of the complexities of who Roberto Duran is. Now, you know, he's back. He spent most of his life. He still lives in Panama. He's still married to the same woman. He's got 175 kids and 400 grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And he's once again a hero in Panama City. He's tried to make something of himself.
Is he still, I mean, did he keep his money?
Things?
Yeah,
never keep their money.
Ups and downs mm-hmm. with that. But he's doing okay now because he's done everything from, like, you know, their version of Dancing with the Stars, which I think is with Roosters. And
he must be a national hero, you would think.
But he is, you know, and he's had a lot. I mean, he has a lot of issues, and he's the first one, I think, at this point that we'll admit he's never always been, you know, an exemplary role model, but mm-hmm. he's hung in there. And Sugar Ray, you know, there's a great ESPN 30 for 30 documentary. The movie makes it seem a little, you know, like, oh, they're best buddies. No, not really.
Maybe not.
But they've kept in touch, and they've, you know, they both kind of understood. And the movie makes this point, too. It wasn't Sugar Ray's brightest moment or most shining moment when he was taunting Duran in the ring before mm-hmm. Duran quit, either. You know, his own corner is saying to him, don't act like this. Be a better man. Be a champion. You know, yeah. He was doing the wind-up and the dancing and the shuffling and everything, the clown routine. You know? And Sugar Ray regrets some of that himself.
There's a fun fact for everybody. There's shots of Sugar Ray promoting this movie on the red carpet, and he lifts up his shirt, and he has like an 8-pack.
He's in unbelievable shape. He's in unbelievable shape right now, Sugar Ray Leonard. Yeah.
Really amazing.
It's just easier when you're in great shape your whole life.
Let's go with that.
You never fall out of great shape, maybe.
Yeah, because that Leon Spinks is just a profile in...
Jerry Cooney.
George Foreman.
Going to kind of go through some guys now. Let me just go back. Yeah, well, it is interesting because boxing movies, I think, are more interesting than boxing is now, mm-hmm. right? Because
absolutely.
Well, you go into an interesting cultural issue here, which mm-hmm. is that boxing has been supplanted by mixed martial arts,
absolutely,
and it's just UFC, not yeah. what it was, and there's no great star. You know, the last great star, right, was Mike Tyson,
yeah,
in mm-hmm. boxing. And but then the Klitschko brothers, who look like Frankenstein.
Yeah, I mean, it was a different era. Oh, you and I would go to the Chicago Theater.
Yeah.
You know, because it would be a closed circuit broadcast of Tyson against Michael Spinks, which my beer was still cold, and then Michael Spinks' eyes were in the back of his head. Do we have to leave now? But these were such events, these fights. You know? Mm-hmm.
And the technology is such that it could be again. And basically what happened was mixed martial arts won the day by just promoting more of it and having more of a card. And there's just a weirdness to it. And then the women in it, because women in boxing, with all due respect to Leila Ali and the other women who do it, some of them are, you know, they're very good, because the whole idea of boxing is not to get hit. Mm-hmm. That's the art of boxing is to avoid the punch. And that's what makes it the sweet science, as they call it. To me, mixed martial arts is just about hurting a guy or a girl until they have to give up, which I learned that's also what judo is in the Olympic sports. I don't understand anything that goes on anymore. I don't. When Trump's president, this is all going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Is he getting this, by the way? Because I think he didn't. He
host?
No.
No. Yeah, no, but he hosted a ton of
There's
the
of guy
boxing.
Who's in the background a couple of times. Is Howard Cosell asking questions at press conference. Yeah.
Ray Leonard.
Roberto Duran.
Yeah, that was a big deal. All right, we'll come back. Now, this is the most anticipated horror film of the year?
Since the last most anticipated horror film
That's
of the
what
year.
I thought.
Don't Breathe.
Yeah. Don't Breathe. I'm okay. I will.
Okay, and also, I got to tell you my Kareem story. And by the way, who was also in a martial arts movie with Bruce Lee? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was.
All right, all that's coming your way. But first, Violetta Paramedics got the WGN traffic trouble spot. Richard Roper is here. Susan Schmidt is here. The Knarble wagon is out. Anna's here. Violetta's here. Veronica's here. Mm-hmm. Sammy's got a show at 10 o'clock tonight, so he's going to sleep on his cot.
Nice.
Until he starts with that thing.
What's going on here?
Yeah, it's a lot going on right there. All right. Now, wait. I want, first of all, should we do the review or your Kareem Abdul-Jabbar story?
Let's do the review.
Okay.
And then we'll talk Kareem. So Don't Breathe. Now, remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about Lights Out, which is that horror movie that I love and gave 4 stars to.
Mm-hmm.
Don't Breathe. I've seen some critics. One critic called it the best horror film in the last 20 years. A lot of buzz on this one. And I have to say, I love the setup of this one. It's set in Detroit. And there's a ring of teenage burglars. They're very clever. One of them has a father who works as a security guard in a lot of... And there are some nice houses. Susan can attest to this in the Detroit area. There are a few.
Gross Point, very nice.
So he's got the keys and the security codes. The dad does to some nice houses, so the son can get a hold of those, steal those from dad. So it's a ring of teenage burglars. They hear about a blind Iraq veteran whose daughter was run over and killed. So he's got a big stash of cash, supposedly, in a safe in his house. And he lives in a not-so-nice neighborhood. So they figure he's the perfect target. He's a blind, distraught veteran on a block where there's no other houses. They can just break into the house and steal the money from the blind, distraught veteran. Bad idea, teenage burglars, because guess what? Once they get in the house, you know what's going to happen.
Uh-oh.
He's going to turn the tables on them. So most of the movie is, and Stephen Lang plays the veteran, and if you don't know the name, you've seen him in a million movies. He was the general in Avatar. He's usually always the general. He's got that very dignified look. And these teenage burglars think they're going to get the best of him because he's blind, but of course he knows his own house very well. And then when the power goes out, because he turns it out, now it's dark and the playing fields equalize. Now it's a game of cat and mouse. Are they going to be able to get out of the house before he systematically offs each and every one of them? I liked it. I'm giving it 3 stars. I don't think it's a classic. As opposed to Lights Out, which was a psychological thriller, and we saw very little violence, this one we see all the violence.
Oh, man.
And some of it's very clever. And some of it's just really disgusting. And there's one scene, and people who see this movie will know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'll tell you guys off the air what the scene is.
I can't tell you.
Well, no, because it gives away too much of the plot.
Okay, all right.
But there's a revenge moment that is among the 10 most disgusting scenes I've ever seen in a movie going back to my childhood.
Wow.
Making Linda Blair's head rotating and spewing out the vomit look like child's play. It is just unbelievably grotesque, but it's a yay moment because you're hoping for that character to get the revenge bestowed upon them. But you have to know when you're going into this. This is a hard R, very gruesome, clever, but kind of repetitive, and it kind of does traffic in some horror cliches and leaves itself open for the inevitable sequel. So 3 stars for Don't Breathe. But just know that it's very scary, but also very gruesome. You know those scenes where in some movies you see the blood splatter against the wall, that kind of classic reaction shot? Here they show you why it's splattering against the wall. Then they show you splatter against the wall. Then they show you a skull getting smashed into the wall.
Okay, all right.
I suppose in this Game of Thrones reality that we live in now, I think that's all elevated, isn't it?
Right. Game of Thrones is sissy play compared to some of the things you see in Don't Breathe.
Stephen King even tweeted out that he's going to see it tonight. That's quite an
I believe he will cover his eyes. Stephen King will cover his eyes at one moment in this.
Sam Panayotovich actually has some breaking information here that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so it turns out, Ro, the 32-year-old woman that was shot at 64th and Calumet, the victim has been identified as Nikia Aldridge, who's the mother of 4 children, also the first cousin of Bulls guard Dwayne Wade, who, ironically enough, Ro, Anna, and Rich, was hosting a town hall yesterday for the Undefeated. It was on ESPN. They were talking about violence in inner cities. And Wade's last tweet 21 hours ago reads as follows, quote, "Every 16 minutes, someone in Chicago is killed by a firearm."
Oh,
end
my
quote.
God. And his cousin is the
first
latest
cousin.
Victim.
Wow.
Mother of 4. My God.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw some of that. It was really moving. But now that's another tragedy. It's going to have the whole country, the whole world looking at
it. Is that every 60 minutes someone shot by a firearm? Or because killed is not an accurate statistic. I mean, it's bad here.
That's according to his Twitter.
Okay. All right,
that's what he tweeted out. Obviously, violence on his mind. And my God.
But that was 21 hours ago before this took place.
Absolutely horrible.
Wow.
And one of the participants, as Sam knows, last night was one of Derek Rose's security people, who's a former gangbanger, talking about turning it around and trying to do something positive. But
they're saying that she was pushing a child in a stroller, walking with another man when she was approached and shot in the head.
Wow.
Apparently, she was registering her child at Dulles Elementary School at the time of the shooting and was walking away.
Horrible.
Just a tragic situation.
This is, I mean, hate to date to give credit here, but this is what Donald Trump was saying yesterday, right? I mean, this is what he was talking about in Chicago, that, there's a mothers and their beautiful children going across the street and getting shot. And that is the awful, ugly truth of Chicago right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bullets don't know any names or anything. It's just lots of people who are not bad people are being shot all the time.
Yeah. All right. Sammy, thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. All right. Okay. So last night, I hate to go back to that after that piece of information, but you know what? Why don't we save it? Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it with Tom Skilling.
Okay.
Because I think that Tom will enjoy this story that you're going to tell. I've got a little preview of it. And I think that's going to be I think he's going to like this.
Absolutely.
All right. Can you stick around?
I would love to stick around, first of all, to talk to Tom. And we can even talk very briefly, too, because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, of course, his latest book is a lot about the very thing we just talked about here and the problems we're facing in America. So,
All right. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlanc is right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper is here. Susan Schmidt is here. Tom Skilling is here.
Hi,
Tom. Aaron Preston.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, thought we were starting a dance party with it. That intro music. That was good. Yeah, I like that.
Dancing.
Yeah, I would like to see you spinning on your head, Tom.
Tom, can I tell you something?
Yes.
If I ever have a dance party with you, I will then take an entire bottle of sleeping pills and curl up in a ball and die a happy man because I've done everything I've ever wanted to do in life.
And if you ever take a picture of the dance party where I am doing any dancing, Richard, I'm going to break the camera. So I.
I knew he had that side. Just like that show, The Night Of, that series. You just know Tom's got another side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that would be a moment, wouldn't it?
Oh. Yeah, that's for sure. All right, we got a lot to talk about here. First of all, Richard is sticking around. He has a story about hanging out with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar last night.
Yeah.
And I would like to hear this because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has really become a very interesting character.
Yes.
In this cultural moment that we're having here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's an incredible writer.
Yes.
And he has chosen to like become a voice of conscience for America.
Yes. He has.
Yeah, and I'll try to get through this, guys, as quickly as possible, Tom. I think you'll enjoy this. And,
yes.
And I know Ann and Susan will. In particular, when he told me this story last night, I knew Ro would love this. So I've gotten to know Kareem over the years a little bit. He did an amazing – he was part of an amazing documentary about the Negro Basketball League, Tom, which doesn't get anywhere near the play that the Negro Baseball Leagues do. But there were these great leagues. In fact, a lot of it was in Chicago back – we're talking the 20s and 30s and 40s. So I've worked with him on and off on some projects over the years. So he's got a new book, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, called Writings on the Wall, and it's all about the current state of not just race relationship, but culture in America. And I would recommend it to anybody. It's really interesting, and it's not some dry lecture. And the way Kareem puts it is, in his 50 years as a writer, he also played basketball for a while. That's how he thinks of himself.
When he was
17 years old, he was still at Power Memorial High School, and he was becoming a legend already as a basketball player. He got credentialed for a Martin Luther King press conference and actually got to ask Dr. King a question. And that was the beginning of his career as a journalist. But we did an event last night, Tom, in Naperville, on North Central's campus there. They have a beautiful Pfeiffer Hall, a beautiful place. And we talked about his book, and we had a wonderful crowd came out, and we talked about his whole life. And I asked him about his, you know, his, as Ro mentioned, he's been so active and socially active for a long time.
People,
you know, I think a lot of the WGN listeners will know this, but a lot of folks might not remember this or know this, but, you know, in 1968, he did not play on the Olympic team. He chose to boycott the Olympics because what he felt that, you know, the climate, there were so many things going on. He wanted to draw attention to, and that was, of course, the year where some of the, you know, the track athletes were doing the Black Power.
Well, there had been in the Olympic trials in Los Angeles for the track and field team, there had been a bad incident between some of the members of the team and the LAPD.
Yeah.
And so in that, whatever that was June, I think, of 68, which that happened. And obviously everything else was going on, right? Because Bobby Kennedy had just been killed on June 6th of 68, 5th of 68.
You're absolutely
and
right.
then a couple of weeks later, they were doing the time trials. And there was, or maybe it was, I'm sorry, it was August. There was, and then he had the Watts riots. He had all this other crazy stuff going on. And that's when Lee Evans and the guys from the, from the 68 track team, the 400 team.
Tommy Smith, all those
guys famously did that. And I think out of deference and solidarity with them, he stepped away.
So fast forward to, you know, and of course he had, you know, the amazing career at UCLA. And before, most people think of Kareem with the Showtime Lakers, but he was at the Milwaukee Bucks first.
He was, absolutely.
And he won an NBA championship with the Bucks in 1971 with Oscar Robertson, right?
Yeah.
So he's Lew Alcindor at that point. But he had already decided he was going to, you know, he was really getting into the, you know, the teachings of Islam. He had studied the Quran. He had traveled extensively. The day after the Bucks won the NBA championship, he was officially going to get the legally change his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which essentially means, noble and powerful servant.
Yes.
He's in Milwaukee, and someone tells him, you know, the best way we could do this, there's a guy in Chicago that can make this happen in a day, legally, but he can make it happen in one day. Got it all set up for you. He's a councilman down there, and his name is Ed Verdoliak.
Oh, my gosh.
You're kidding.
Ed Verdoliak?
That's how it happened. The day after they won the championship.
That is amazing.
Drove to Chicago. Now, in this day and age, there would have been 8 million media people there. Nobody knew about it. And Ed Verdoliak is the one who actually,
isn't that something?
Was the attorney of record when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's an amazing story. Who would have believed?
As Kareem told me last night, he goes, I understand then that many years later, Ed had a little bit of a vacation, but he's doing well again now. And I said, he's doing very well.
I mean, people know I have been a longtime friend of his. Yeah. And we worked together at WLS 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And I got to know him there. Ed, not Kareem. And the most amazing thing, I think, that through the whole Council Wars moment, I think there was a complete misunderstanding of what was actually going on between Ed Verdoliak and Harold Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a racial thing between the two of them. Ed Verdoliak is one of the most ecumenical people I've ever met.
Absolutely. And always a champion.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, unbelievable.
A champion.
And if you, and people go, hell, you ask.
Yeah.
People, he hired a guy that worked for him that had was one of the guys who went to prison in Greylord, who had the exact same name as one of my relatives. And it was a he was a bailiff in the county court system. And as soon as he got out, it was like he just wanted to give the guy a job because he this is a guy who got ground up, an African-American guy, got ground up in the wheels of this other kind of thing. I mean, there was a there's story, countless stories about that. And his impact on people throughout the years, whether they're big-time celebrities or they're just average folks in the neighborhood who need it, he's been one of those heroes. Yes. He did. I seem to recall. I think he did visit the prison system here for a couple of years. But he's a guy they should make a movie about.
Well, I mean, that alone creamside because I was finally to the point where I could afford a car I could fit into, and I drove from Milwaukee to Chicago. Meets him at the door. We got you all set, Lou.
Well, that's
the last time you're going to be known as Lou.
Right, and that's the sort of thing, too.
You're walking
right?
the door, Lou. You're walking out Kareem.
Did you guys know that Rodoliak was involved? Now, that's the first I had ever heard that.
I'd never heard that story.
No, I never had either. That's an amazing story. Really is.
I had heard that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was inspired by Malcolm X in some way, and he decided he wanted to come up with a new name and identity, but I had not didn't know there was local connection.
You know, it's interesting because it recalls Muhammad Ali and his stance on the Vietnam War and how controversial that was. Mm-hmm. And that was, I mean, that was truly a move driven by conscience. And and here's another example of that. That's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And you know, when I went to school, and worked up in Wisconsin. I went to the Madison campus there and. Boy, that state took their basketball very seriously. You know, there was Al McGuire over at Marquette, and then Kareem Abdul.
Al McGuire, what a great character!
And Kareem. I mean, you know, he was a god up there. It's just amazing. So, what an interesting story! I would never have associated Ed Radoliak with
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
6 degrees of Ed.
You know, I think
when we were done, everybody would be there. Right?
Let me just tell you that there's an incredible story too about a story of Ed Radoliak, Kirk Douglas, and Moose Cholak.
Eastside legends.
Eastside, right. Well, Sammy knows this.
Sammy, yeah.
Sammy knows this as well because Sammy comes from.
He's like, you just mentioned all my uncles.
This is my nursery.
I know these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
They read your books to bed, right? Yeah. When you're going to bed at night as a child.
That happened in Ed's living room, as I seem to recall. There was a moment with Moose Cholak, who was a famous wrestler in the Chicago circuit, such that it was. With Bobo Brazil and some of the other great wrestling legends of the Midwest in the 1970s, and Kirk Douglas. I mean, I don't even know how.
Kirk Douglas.
That's it. That's something.
And Frank Sinatra somehow works his way into the story later. I'm telling you, that is the man they should make a movie about that guy right there. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, this city certainly has some interesting history, doesn't it? And its tentacles extend in directions you don't even imagine. This is one of them right here. So,
I'll tell you what, Tommy, you invite me to that dance party, we'll
there you
start
go.
Another chapter.
As long as you don't photograph it, that, you know.
I'll leave the camera at the door, just like Obama does at the White House sometimes. You know,
Tom,
I gotta leave the camera at the door.
Tom, I'm going to tell you, it's getting a little creepy around here.
It is.
You need
it
a restraining order from this guy. Just let me know.
Yes. But on the other hand, Ro, you and I cry at Barbara Streisand concerts. So, you know, I mean, we all have our little idiosyncrasies,
I know.
Why? Because you're wearing the same outfit?
No.
It's okay to be in touch with your sensitive side. I don't think there's any. I mean,
I love that about you guys talking about the Barbra Streisand.
Well, it's just you're overpowered by the fact that you're in the presence of
greatness.
Greatness,
sure.
Yeah,
that's
a legend.
Cool.
True. I mean,
no,
the likes of which will never come again. And may the legs stick around for a long, long time.
I just like to point out that I'm only in touch with my sensitive side. I'd like to get in touch with some other side.
I don't know.
How do I do that? All right, let's talk about the weekend weather here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the humidity's coming back. It's the last weekend of meteorology. Oh, that's right. We're not supposed to say that.
No.
I forgot it.
Thanks, Tom.
Richard, I'll be banned from this program. I brought that up last night, and I... I think Roe almost had a breakdown.
I was not happy.
Yes, not happy at all about it.
Not happy.
But it is going to be humid. And it looks, by the way, next weekend for the Labor Day weekend, the early read on that is that it's going to be warm, too. Mm-hmm. So this is the...
But there was a talk of... I heard talk.
You heard some talk.
Of the remnants of one of those tropical depression hurricane things hitting Chicago next weekend.
Well, you know what? That was a solution earlier in the week on this system, which still is befuddling forecasters. The thing is cruising across the eastern Bahamas right now. They're still warning folks in Florida, keep your eyes on it. They don't expect tropical development for Florida, but it may take off in the Gulf of Mexico. We've got at least one model that develops a full-blown hurricane. It's not joined by others, so there's uncertainty with this. But that's the last thing the Gulf Coast needs is some sort of major system coming in the wake of what those folks
that's
have been through.
Absolutely
but
true.
That would be next week, so we'll have plenty of time to watch it. No, for us, the indications are that'll loop up through the Appalachians and maybe up the East Coast before it gets here. So, but it looks like a big dome of unusual warmth is developing, and what's going to do is push the jet stream north of us. The jet stream interacting with these thunderstorms spun up those tornadoes in Indiana, Ohio. So this is more like the pattern we should have had up to this point in August, where the steering winds loosen up and the winds down here kind of lighten up. So I would imagine we may have some air pollution issues next week as this air stagnates over us, and it's going to be warm and humid throughout.
But will we have an opportunity to get to the beach this weekend?
I'm going to
be staying at the Indiana Dunes area with my family, and a lot of people want to hit the beach.
Don't write it off. There'll be some thunderstorms around, to be sure, but there are going to be many, many dry hours without the storms. If you get under one, it'll come down pretty well, good, as they always do this time of year. But, no, you got to have a lot of hours to work with. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, and you might start tomorrow with some grayness and some showers around, but they should thin out, and then the warming of the day and the scattered sunshine we get mixed in will heat the atmosphere, and we can get a couple more going later in the day. But looks like a nice warm weekend for trip to the dunes. In fact, that's a great place to go.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
We weren't invited, Tom.
Well, I think there's like 10 people in a two-bedroom home
with
5 kids.
We can just be off
kids.
To the side. We can have our own party.
Great.
Children and 10 or 5
Richard,
adults.
When has that ever stopped us? We can go crash the party.
I think Anna's, she's making a key point. She's doing us a favor.
Doing you a favor.
She's actually going to Wisconsin and trying to misdirect us.
That's true, too.
She's leading us astray.
Hey!
I was on a bunk bed last night, so that tells you what's going on.
That's too much information. All right. Thanks, guys, Tom. You have a great
weekend. Have a wonderful weekend, Ro. You too, and you too, Richard and Anna. And, guys, we'll talk to you next week.
We will. Do the same, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Anna.